Poder Aprender, el podcast que te ayuda a aprender idiomas, hobbies y skills de manera más efectiva. Acá hablamos sobre hábitos de aprendizaje, práctica deliberada y estrategias para aprender mejor. Mi nombre es Walter Freiberg y te invito a desarrollar tu poder de aprender para alcanzar tus metas personales y profesionales. Today on Poder Aprender, I'm speaking with Arnold Baikis, a speaker, author, and a futurist with a powerful mission, helping people move from fitting in to flying out. With a background that spans corporate leadership, psychology, and now brain fitness, Arnold is on a quest to dismantle the mental and emotional straitjackets that keep us small. He believes that the future belongs to those who uncondition themselves, those who reclaim their mental freedom, unleash their uniqueness, and live their own lives. In this conversation, we explore the art of unconditioning, brain fitness, and what it really takes to break free from a life of conformity. Arnold, it's great having you here. Welcome to Poder Aprender.
Thank you very much, Walter. It's a privilege.
Arnold, you often speak about the journey from fitting in to flying out. What was the first time you realized you were living someone else's life?
It's not a moment. It's exactly like you said. It's a journey. It's a process. I really have difficulty in saying it was 24th of October, 1996, and that's when it happened. It's really a process. But the process started where I lost my job in the corporate world, and then I was like, and this was the year 2000. Yeah, so there was not so much about building a startup, starting your own business, whatever. The only thing which existed was basically people would go freelance or a little bit starting their own thing. But I was like, I don't like bosses. I don't like working anymore. Like, I'm going to start my own thing, whatever that was going to be. And that is when I realized that although I was in the corporate world quite successful, I basically knew nothing about myself, the mental qualities and capacities to deal in and with business. That's what I knew, and I was pretty good at. I knew nothing about myself. I knew nothing about emotions, spirituality, environment, social aspects. And that was the realization, I've been in a very confined world, the corporate world, where I thought that that was the world. But then I stepped out of that world. I'm like, holy moly, there is so much more where I had no clue about. So it's like moving in terms of your languages and moving to other countries and cultures. It's like I would go to another country and I had no clue how it would look like.
That's wonderful. And that makes me think also of when you say fitting in, and when we're talking about fitting in, I have an idea of what that means, like being compliant or trying to being adequate to a certain thing. And I wonder about flying out. What do you mean by that?
Fitting in, my definition is you start living someone else's life, and flying out means you start to live your own life. Allow me to explain. The fitting in starts for most people the moment you're born. The moment you're a baby and Walter comes into your father and mother, they very soon start to make you do what they want you to do. Don't cry at night. Eat your food. Don't spoil the stuff. Everything like that. That's the moment they start to mold you in the way they want. Well, maybe you go to kindergarten, but let's say you go to primary school. What do they do at primary school? They make you do what they want you to do and how to behave and be quiet and sit still and do your homework and raise your hand when you have a question or want to go to the toilet or whatever. That's the same thing throughout your old school, primary school, high school. Maybe you go to some vocational training or university. It's like they all have a certain agenda and a certain goal where they condition you in a certain way. So by the time a person is 20, 25, the only thing what we have learned, and if we are okay with it, and I'm not talking about the renegades or rebels or whatever, is to meet the expectations of other people. When was Walter, when was Arnold a good kid? When you do exactly what your parents tell you to do. When are you a good student? When you do exactly what your teacher tells you to do, or professor, whatever label you. And then you start to work. When is your boss happy with you? When you do exactly what he tells you to do. So that's why I say, by the time we're 2025, we've only learned to meet expectations of others. In other words, you're not living your own life. You're living the life of your parents, teachers, and bosses.
Right. Yeah. It's like we learn how to be disciplined by others. And I know that this is something you also talked about, how you were raised in a very strict military household and there were very strict rules. And then throughout your high school years and when you were young, and that's also what happens to most of us to different degrees, we learn how to be disciplined based on what others tell us to do. And what is the role of discipline and disciplining ourselves when we want to get out of that and when we want to fly out?
Well, like everything, because we live in a duality, discipline has good aspects and it got not so good aspects. The really good ones are when you go to school and everything is like, well, you got to be obedient, you got to do what they say, you got to be on time, you got to do whatever. Those things I already knew from home. Yeah, so for me, it was like, that was easy. Yeah? But to give another example, my first job at a multinational and, let's say one of the biggest bosses in the division, literally was a big guy. He looked like an angry man. He was a big man. He always looked like this, and he was like, his communication was, yes, no, this, I'm not exaggerating, this is the way he communicated. So everybody was afraid of him. And when I can still recall, there was some kind of an introduction meeting, a weekend somewhere with new people, new employees, and whatever. And I started challenging him because he said something. I said, well, maybe it's a little bit different, or maybe like that. And all the people were like, Arnold will have a problem because he's a new guy and he starts to ask questions and to do this thing. As opposed to the other guys, I was not afraid of him because I had lived with, well, by that time, let's say I was 26, 27, I'd lived 26 years with my father. So I'm like, piece of cake. So it's like, yeah, so that worked to my advantage. So that discipline and also not at the same time is like, because that person has the label, he's the boss, he knows the truth. I knew that it was not true. So the discipline is a good thing and a negative thing. The negative thing is that you can see it as a goal in itself. But discipline is like helping you on your journey to get where you want to go. So it's like I said, is that you gotta use it in a way that supports what you're doing rather than limits what you're doing.
Yeah. So in order to make you do the things that you want to do, so get yourself to do the things that you want to do that you know are good for yourself and that are aligned to your goals. So that's how you use discipline.
Give a very easy but powerful example. Like I said, I'm 25 years I'm running my own business. That could mean I could stay in my bed all day. I could stay here. I could get out of my bed at 11 in the morning and every night drink beer or whatever I want, because nobody's going to say, Arnold, you're not allowed to do that. And Arnold, you didn't show up on time. Nobody's going to say that. Yeah? But my discipline is helping me. If I wouldn't have my discipline, I would never be where I am today. Because, for instance, I found out, I learned that for sleep, your sleep rhythm is really crucial, that you get to bed at the same time and you get out of bed at the same time, 7 days a week. That might sound challenging to people, but I introduce it to myself and it helps a lot. It works great. But that means if I want to see a football match, like, well, what was it? Last Saturday when there was the Champions League final and whatever. Normally I would watch that, but over here it's too late. So I'm like, I'm not going to watch it. That's my discipline.
Yeah. So that's in service of your own long-term health. And I love what you say about going to bed at the same time and getting up at the same time. And this is something that is very underestimated lately. And I came to learn about this. I use a Whoop, so one of those fancy bands. And so here's called sleep consistency. And this is one of the, is an important source of information, of data. And sometimes it can be even more important than the amount of sleep you're getting, like the consistency that you're getting. So this is very in line to scientific research and like the latest data we have on sleep performance and how we can do better. And sleep is such an important thing. And I recently paying more attention, and it's hard. And at the same time, it's like, it's so basic and it's so fundamental and so available to most of us. That's something that we can do. And at the same time, it's so challenging because the temptations are endless, like to stay up at night, to get up late, especially for an entrepreneur. Like, as you say, if we don't rule ourselves, there's no one else ruling us.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you start applying it, you will see the benefits. And in the other end, what I notice is if you're used to it, if I don't do it, I'm very disappointed in myself.
Yeah.
Besides that, I wouldn't feel rested or having a headache or whatever. It's like, Arnold, it was really a shitty behavior. It's like, yeah, so instead of external validation, I start to validate myself.
Yeah. It's like you start letting yourself down.
Yeah. But it's like, hey, in essence, I was not good for myself. Yeah. So, but the same thing happened. Let me give another example, Walter. It's like when I stopped drinking alcohol. I was used to drinking alcohol every day. And then I made a decision to stop, which by doing it, fortunately, well, I would have been close to addiction, but I wasn't. So I could stop and there were no physical problems. But your environment, that's what you mean. Your environment has a huge influence on that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I was playing hockey and after the hockey match, we would drink a beer. Or like, would you like a beer? No. Huh? Are you okay? Yeah. Or their parties. Or the opposite is like, yeah, you had really a lousy day and you would like to drink some alcohol, or you cannot sleep and you would say, yeah, or you feel sick and you need some alcohol. Obviously, no, not going to do it. That stuff. But again, it's like, that's the beginning. Once you get through the process, I literally am now sick. If you want me to drink one sip of alcohol, I will be sick. I noticed because it was 2 years ago, I drink in the weekend alcohol-free beer. And in the shell, these were all alcohol-free beer, but apparently they had set a bottle or a can on the wrong place. I just opened up the can and drinking, and first sip, I didn't know. And then after sip two, I was like, maybe I'm getting sick. I don't know what happened, but I really feel sick. I feel nauseous, whatever. And then at some point, I looked at the can. I was like, holy moly, it's got alcohol in it. You know, I was really sick after just two sips. So I was like, that's really good news. So even if I try, I feel really sick.
Yeah, you develop more sensitivity to that. And I was also thinking, when, as you were speaking about, like what you mentioned of when you spoke up to that boss, you were in that corporate environment, that big boss. And I was thinking also on the role of discomfort in all this conformity. And in that moment, you decided to speak up and you were willing to, maybe it wasn't so uncomfortable for you because you had practice and you had some repetitions at home because of the household you were brought up. And let's say that someone is feeling that discomfort and inconformity and wants to start breaking free from that. So this person feeling the discomfort of conformity and wants to break free, what are the first steps to breaking free and flying out?
Well, your first step is that you will most likely feel fear because you're going to do something uncomfortable and you know it, and you're anxious, you're worried, how will people react, how will I respond, how will I do it, and it's like, I don't want to do it, and it might be painful, or it might be not nice, whatever. that any change, well, I don't know whether it was intentionally or not, but you made a nice link. It looked like the same word, like discomfort and conformity. Conformity means you are very comfortable in your situation and you're most likely, you have all your habits and your process and everything. Like, I'm used to doing this. That's where I feel comfortable. That's what I would like to continue doing. When you're discomfortable, because you step out of your conformity and say, hey, I'm no longer going to do that. That creates uncertainty. It is, so besides fear, it will create uncertainty. It's like, well, I don't know whether I can do it or how it will work out. For instance, let me take the example of me stopping with alcohol. I had a date when I stood, but I didn't know whether I would get shaky hands or I would be, because I drink a lot of alcohol. So I was like, maybe there are now some signs popping up that I'm really addicted. I didn't know. So that creates uncertainty. That creates discomfort. But any change is in the beginning uncomfortable. So you got to be comfortable in being uncomfortable. That's what I teach people. It's a part of the process. And we forget about it. But when we were young, very young, well, I cannot recall when I started to walk or whatever. You were first crawling and then you start to walk. It was not comfortable from the very beginning. I can still recall starting to bike. And even later on when I had to learn how to drive a car. And in the Netherlands, most of you have manual gearbox. It's not easy, but looking in the bike is like, it's something where you think it's not difficult or easy because everybody's doing it. And then you start to do it for the first time and you're like, well, this is more difficult than I thought. And so you feel very uncomfortable. And you're like, wow, this is difficult. I can still remember when I had to learn how to drive in a car. I was like, I'm never going to learn this. This is so difficult. Yeah, because it was like, yeah, you put with the one's the brake and the other one's the gas and the other one's the clutch. And then you have the gearbox and then you have to look in your mirrors. Eh? And I was looking like this. I'm watching the window. Got to do this. I would look, it's too much. I cannot do it. That's being uncomfortable, but that's a part of any change. You are a wizard. You speak many languages. But the beginning of every new language is not easy. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is confusing.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. Oh, I thought it worked like this. Oh, it doesn't work like that. I don't know what that word is or I don't know how these things work. So it's like every new thing, and we don't realize it in the beginning, is uncomfortable. But that's part of the process. If you stop then you're lost. But if you just continue, it becomes easier, easier, easier by the time you don't even notice. So
it gets better.
Yeah, it gets better and easy and you don't even have to think because it becomes like an autopilot.
Yeah, the unconscious competence, right? Yeah, I love what you said about being comfortable in discomfort. And I deeply resonate with that. And I agree that's so important in this process. And you also talk about unconditioning. And you said this is kind of an art. And what exactly is that process, or what does it look like in everyday life? Could you give us a couple examples? How can we uncondition ourselves?
Well, it starts like everything with awareness. Awareness that you are being conditioned, which I didn't know when I was young, when I was growing up. Yeah. So without realizing, you're being conditioned by your parents, you're being conditioned by your teachers, you're being conditioned by your boss. Maybe you have a partner, you're being conditioned by your partner because they all want you to behave in a certain way. And even maybe you're part of a team or a group of friends or whatever. It's like everybody to be part of the group, you have to behave in a certain way and you have to detach to see that people only like you or people when you do exactly what they expect you to do. That is the awareness. So the awareness is like in my hockey team, they like that when I drink beer and when I was the only one not drinking beer, they become uncomfortable with me. So it is the social conditioning which I realize you're no longer a member of the herd, you're doing something different. They don't like you anymore. Number one is the awareness that there is conditioning and that you are being conditioned, well, basically throughout your life, unless you step out of it. And some things take a lot of work because you have to adapt to new things. And other things, by the moment I tell you that's the way it would look. But let me give you an example which really had a huge impact on me and has had a huge impact on my clients. I'm sure about you and your clients. Is that I told you that at some point in time I get out of the corporate world. Then I got a coach. And again, this 25 years ago, so that was not a natural thing to do. And at some point, I was discussing with him what I wanted to do now, whether I would want another corporate job or something else or do this or that. Whatever. And when I was explaining to my coach what I wanted to do, it's like they said, Arnold, you only said what you don't want. I said, I don't want a boss. I don't want a company which is slow. I don't want something with this long process. I don't want this. You always say what you don't want. I said, okay, yeah, you're right about that. But Arnold, what do you want? Huh? I literally was lost for words. I couldn't answer at all. That was when I was at the beginning of my 40s. He asked that question and I literally didn't know what to say. That was the first time in my life, Walter, that someone had asked me that question. So that is indicative, my experience and many, many other people's, that we're so used that other people tells us what we have to want and what we have to do, that we not even ever thought about it. My parents, my teacher, nobody had ever asked me that question. Arnold, what do you want?
It's a big deal, right?
Isn't it very unnatural? I was in my 50s, but I can talk now with people in their 70s, 80s. Most people still don't know because nobody had asked them that question. So I think that's very sad. It's very sad. And that is the realization about, well, I've been totally focused on making other people happy with my behavior. So what I'm doing, saying, whatever, if that is in line with these other people that expect from me, I am okay. So that is what you could also call external validation. It's like, yeah, you're totally focused on the external world. Did I do it okay? Are they satisfied? Didn't I make a mistake? But Arnold, what do you want? This has been my journey ever since. And I'm still discovering who I am and where I need to learn. And I want to grow, want to understand. I even worked on it this morning. So it's like, that is a huge shift that we need to start asking those questions ourselves rather than wait for someone else to tell you what to do. So that's the main thing. What is my definition of unconditioning is to dismantle the straitjackets of other people's agenda.
I so appreciate what you say about this increasing this awareness that we have and the difference between stating what we want in a negative or in the positive. And even though this might be like a first step for many people, or this is what we are used to do, like when you ask me, what do I want? I don't want to be overweight, or I don't want to be lazy. And maybe there's another step beyond that. That is, I want to do this. I want to be this in a positive. And instead of stop being this, in a sense, it's like we keep recreating that, right?
Absolutely. But that there is you could call it conditioning, but you can also call it a huge mistake in our lives, that we think the way we are being educated is that, okay, you go to school, you do a certain vocational training, education, and then it's like, okay, let's say you're 20, 25. What you're taught then is you're supposed to do the work which you choose for the next 45 years. That is the message which has been given. It's like, you do that, and by the time, let's say, you're 70, you can retire and do nice things. That is the narrative upon which the whole education system is built, the whole society is built, but that narrative is totally untrue, especially in today's world where things are so rapidly changing every day that it would be even impossible to do what you're doing today in the same thing for the next 20, 30, 40 years. It doesn't exist. The narrative brings you in a world which maybe used to exist 100 years ago, but it certainly doesn't exist now anymore. So, indeed what you said, you continuously have to adapt and learn and grow. But the moment you grow, the moment you start to understand it, like, who's Walter? What do I like? You have to test. You have to try. You have to be curious. But maybe you try something and say, maybe I like painting. I tried it for a couple of months. I really don't like painting. Fine, do something else. So it's like you try and then you think, oh, and then there's some other stuff. It's like, I really like that. I didn't know I would like that. Well, let me give my own example. It's like writing in the sense of writing books. I just finished three small, I call them tales, which are my first attempt at nonfiction writing. I've written a couple of nonfiction books, and I now can say I know how to do that and I can do that. But this is my first attempt where I incorporate nonfiction stuff. That talking about being uncomfortable. So it's like, okay, I had to try these things. But like before that, years before that, you would say, Arnold, you're going to be a writer and write a couple of books. I would say, oh, you're totally crazy. I don't like writing. But it's like if you evolve, you grow, you develop or whatever. And I'm like, I kind of like writing. So it's like you have to try, but it's like, you are today not the same person as the same person in 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, etc. At that point in time, you have to adapt to what fits you, who you are in that moment.
Yeah, we are limiting ourselves. And it's like we are not using fully our imagination. And we are contracting our own sense of possibility. And this is something I see around all the time. People looking for their purpose. What is that I'm going to do with my life? And I can keep thinking about what's my ultimate purpose and what I'm here to do. And people are not willing to go on experiments and experiment in things and trying things out and putting that into practice and seeing what it's like. And instead, what I see is people, they prefer to just be in their head and their thoughts and think that maybe after watching enough YouTube videos or Instagram reels, they will finally find out what their purpose was, as if that was something lost. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, actually, I find it very sad. I had that problem myself as well, because that's what all the literature says. And this has been going on for 20, 30 years. Like, oh, you need to have a purpose. What's your purpose? What's your passion? Yeah, like, what's that? I don't know. Yeah, and then I tell you, maybe it's 90% plus of the people, they have no clue. But everybody's like, whoa. You need to have something. So in your example where people make a choice, it's more likely, well, let's do this. So that question stops bothering me. It's not a choice from your heart. It's just like, oh, I need to have an answer and I need to do this. And that's another sign of being uncomfortable. It's like, accept that you don't know. Not knowing is fine. Not knowing, I say, is a part of my philosophy. It's like, most beautiful sayings start from being in this void. You're in a void. It's like, hey, I am here. Maybe I want to go there, but I don't know the next steps. I don't know what to do. In that void, that is where you learn. That is where you grow. That is where you say, exactly like you said, experiment. It's like, well, I don't know, but let's try painting. Well, I don't like painting. Okay, well, maybe writing. Hey, that writing, you didn't know that. And so it like experiment, try, do all these things. But in that void, the void is okay. Whereas in our reality, they say, no, you must constantly know what to do. And I think it's nonsense. It's like, it's impossible. It's like you grow as a human being, the world changes, the world grows. And it's like, I mean, just before this call, I'm working on a new offering, but it's like where I'm considering one of the things which really drives me is like what to do with AI and how to help people. It's incredible the number of people are losing their jobs due to AI, and it will be even accelerating it. And I give you the numbers only in the US this year. So let's say it's from January to May. 100,000 people have lost their jobs. It's not only AI, it's also humanoid robots. They're like, so I was envisioning, like, what does it mean for the future? What does it mean for work? How can I help those people? Mm. What should they do? Because maybe they're like, oh, I'm going to do the same job in another game. Yeah, but they also have the AI and then they have this. It was like, so I'm in a situation of not knowing. I don't have the answers yet. I hope to get somewhere. But it's like, that's part of your process. The part of the process is like, I don't know, but I'm figuring out and I'm thinking about it. And sooner or later, I will get some insights and then I will hopefully have some answers where I can help people.
Yeah, you're figuring it out and you're curious and you're open and you have a willingness to learn more about that. And you said something very interesting is that in this era, humans are robotized and robots are humanized. What are the implications of this? Can you tell us more about that?
Unfortunately, the implications you see every day. There's been a lot of research and studies, and I was speaking with people all over the world, is that people's IQ, intelligence quotient, is declining, emotional quotient is declining, mental health quotient is declining, and I'm adding another one, which I call communication intelligence, is also declining. So people are not comfortable anymore in critical thinking, in understanding, in memorizing, in long-term view. We can go into why that is. It's clearly, in my opinion, not the fault of those people. It's not the fault of the student. It's the fault of a lot of other things which are happening in the world right now. But that means, that's what I say, is like you already see that people are being robotized. Look at, are you still in Uruguay?
I'm still in Uruguay, right.
Yeah, so if you see, and it used to be a year ago, whatever, when you see young women walking on the street, they would walk like this. They would walk like with their phone in their hands. Mm-hmm. Used to be mainly women. This was a year ago. And that's the way they walk on the sidewalk. Yeah, I see them every day on the sidewalk and they go to the bus station. So they are already being guided by that phone. What has changed now? You see young men doing it, but now you see also senior citizens walking with this thing and sitting in the bus constantly looking at this thing. That is what I call conditioning through the technology. That means you're robotized because you can do nothing without the same.
Or nobody. We are useless without a phone.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that 99% of the people, suppose you're going to your work or to your school or your whatever, and you're like, oh, I left my phone at home. People would go totally crazy. So that's why I say is what you already see and what's happening. And unfortunately, you see it in the numbers, is that critical thinking, understanding, IQ, everything, people cannot do anything. And people cannot think. They cannot calculate. They cannot calculate. If I ask you what is 5 times 36, they don't know. They got to put it on the phone. This is already the case. This is the case all over the world. If you talk about, so that's why I say people are robotized, and this is going very, very fast, and I'm very worried about that. The other thing is that robots are being humanized. Literally, they're called humanoid robots. And if you integrate, and that's what's happening, is like robots with AI, they almost can do anything from cooking your meal to being a barista in a coffee bar to working in a warehouse for Amazon. It's like, and even putting stuff in and out your dishwasher in your home without breaking your plates, whatever. It's like, it's totally incredible. It's totally great. You've seen there are now a lot of videos about robots who are dancing or they're jumping over things on the parkour. This quote which I said, people are robotized and robots are humanized. I think I wrote it down 10 years ago. This is the reality of today.
Yeah, it's like science fiction. It's like we're living in a movie. It's like a film.
Definitely, but that is really the case. But we have to realize that we are totally losing control over our own life.
And what is a place for brain fitness and the work you do here in all this turmoil and all these changes that are happening?
Yeah, so what I'm trying to help people with is that most people by now understand that in order to keep your body functioning at a certain level, you need to exercise, you need to move. So that is where the term body fitness or fitness in itself start to emerge. When I was young, it didn't exist. Yeah, so anyone you ask now is like, yeah, maybe you can go to the gym, you can walk your dog, you can play tennis, you can play football, it doesn't matter. But people understand that, hey, in order for my body to keep on functioning, and especially if I get older, it's crucial that I do some movement, some exercise, okay? But what are you doing for your brain? I just explained that basically, especially already young people, your brain is declining, is degrading, is declining. But that would happen to your body as well. Ask a person who never exercises and you can see how they are. That is why it's really crucial that you do the same for your brain. Your brain also after the age of 30 starts to decline. At first it's slow, but the moment you get older and older, it starts faster and faster and faster. So just like with your body, you understand you get to keep on moving, getting it fit and doing these things. That's when I realized like, hey, you need to do the same thing for your brain. So that means you can prevent a lot of negative things like mental illnesses or whatever, but also elderly diseases. But at the same time, and you alluded to that earlier, you're like, we have so much more potential, Walter. We have so much more things what we can do. How many languages again do you speak? Six, seven? What is it?
Five languages.
Five. So most people, they only speak one language or maybe two. And people would say, that's totally impossible. Like, you're speaking five languages. No, here's Walter. He speaks five.
I know people who speak 10 or 20.
I had an uncle who had the languages, but he spoke the old version. So he didn't speak Persian, but old Persian. Sanskrit. And he was a professor in old languages. So it's like, we can do so much more. Everyone can do and be so much more, but we are limited, what I call by straitjackets, that we cannot do these things. I ask people, it's like a year ago, there were the Olympics in Paris. And I say, have you watched it? Yeah, I watched that. Have you seen some of the games? Yeah. Have you seen the gold medal winner? Yeah, I've seen it. Okay. How many of those gold medal winners were in a straitjacket? Huh? What are you saying, Arnold? Strange question. Of course nobody had a straitjacket. Yes. Why is it of course? It's of course because that would be limiting, right? Yes. So why do you wear a straitjacket every day?
Because I'm not an Olympic athlete. It might be the answer.
It's because I call them invisible straitjacket. I have by now a list. I've identified 35 different straitjackets which we are wearing. Out of those 35, I would say 30 wore myself. And I didn't know. So if you remove them, you're like, well, I didn't know I could do that. I feel more free. I feel more healthy. My well-being increases. My performance increases. My creativity increases because I remove all those limitations.
What is the most prevalent of these straitjackets that you have numbered? Do you see more? This is all over the place.
I would like to answer two.
Okay.
What I call the subordination straitjacket is whether it's at home or with your bosses, whatever. It's like, hey, I'm the authority figure, I'm the boss, and you should be doing what I tell you to do. And that way of telling these things is, how do they do that? Is they always start to criticize you. It's like, oh, Walter, you got three faults. They don't say you get seven good answers. No, you get three wrong. And this is your mistake. And this is a failure. And this is not good enough. And you should think. The consequence is that I would say without exception, I haven't met any person who's not, that we all have the feeling that we're not good enough. Everybody recognizes that. Is if I say, be honest, do you have the feeling you're not good enough? Yeah, I have that feeling. I also have that feeling. It's still part of me. That is because of subordination. Because the way to keep you low is to constantly point you is like, that's not good, that's not good, that's not good.
What would be the second?
The second one is done in religion and in spirituality, whatever, is that they have the same approach. Well, in most religion, they tell you, you're a sinner. You're not good enough. You didn't do these things okay. And you have to shape up, otherwise you get to hell. You don't want to go to hell, but now you're not good enough. You got to change these things. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Catholic or a Buddhist or Islam. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. It's like, you are a sinner. You're doing a lot of those things wrong, and you should change that.
Yeah. So to close this conversation, if each listener today would have to take one small step toward unconditioning themselves, something small that they can do today, they can start practicing right now, not tomorrow, what would that be?
Very simple and very difficult at the same time. I would invite you to be kind to yourself.
Kindness to ourselves. Yeah, thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this conversation before? And I know that you have something, a resource to share with us and with my audience about what you do. And before sharing that, is there anything else you'd like to share about that we haven't covered?
Well, I normally say as starting point, there are three starting points, and they're quite crucial in this respect. Number one is it's not your fault. Meaning, most of us feel lousy, have health problems, mental, emotional challenges, have everything. But we all think because of that conditioning that is our fault. And I say it's not your fault. I explained a little bit how it's your environment which has impacted you. And even when you're growing up as a kid, you have no influence on that. Realize it's not your fault. There's nothing wrong with you. Number two, I alluded to that as well, is that I would say nuke the narrative and start writing your own story. So don't believe all the narratives, yeah, from the COVID to the religious one to that we all have to go into the AI thing, whatever it is, like, no, create your own story. And number three is, instead of what we're doing in the conditioning, is that you're living from the outside in. How do people react to me, and what do they expect me to do, and what do they want me to do? Live from the inside out.
Wonderful. So we are concluding this episode with those three. I appreciate that. And where can people experience and get to know more about the work that you do? And is there anything you'd like to share with my audience? I know that there is a masterclass.
Yes, I have basically two kinds of offerings on my website. It's called braingym.fitness. And my masterclass are videos about a specific topic. They're around 90-minute videos, like finding out what your uniqueness is. I think that's a much better question than your purpose. So figure out what your uniqueness is. It's about relationships. It's about stimulating your curiosity. It's about dealing with emotions. So a couple of different topics specific for that topic. It's a workshop I do with someone else, but there are questions which you hopefully apply to your own life. So those are the masterclasses, and the main training, from fitting into flying out, is a 15-week training where there's one 90-minute session each week. And in the period in between, you start to apply it, you start to learn, you start to research things around it. And then the next week, so there's a 15-week training to help you to make that shift from fitting in to flying out. So that's all on braingym.fitness. If you still have questions or need something to ask me, whatever, is like, there's a link to my agenda, so you can book a meeting with me and we can just have a conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Arnold. It's been great. I learned a lot, and I know that my audience also will expand their views and their sense of possibility around learning and their sense of fitness beyond body fitness to brain fitness and the other things that we covered today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Walter.
Puedes escuchar Poder Aprender en las principales plataformas de podcast y en YouTube. También te invito a suscribirte al newsletter semanal en poderaprender.com para enterarte de los nuevos episodios del podcast y otras novedades para aprender mejor. En redes sociales, puedes buscar este podcast como Poder Aprender. Encontrá todos los links en la descripción. Y si te gusta mucho, si te sirve el contenido del podcast, te invito a dejar una reseña y una calificación de 5 estrellas en Spotify o Apple Podcasts para que estos episodios lleguen a más personas y que más gente pueda aprender mejor. Eso es todo por ahora. Nos vemos en un próximo episodio. Sigan aprendiendo y acuérdense de practicar bien.